former President Barack Obama gave a speech at Stanford University last week calling out social media companies. He said they make existing divides in society even worse and that they're making democracy weaker.
For more and more of us, search and social media platforms aren't just our window into the internet. They serve as our primary source of news and information. No one tells us that the window is blurred, subject to unseen distortions and subtle manipulations. All we see is a constant feed of content where useful, factual information and happy diversions and cat videos flow alongside lies, conspiracy theories, junk science, quackery, white supremacist, racist tracts, misogynist screeds. And over time, we lose our capacity to distinguish between fact, opinion, and wholesale fiction.
He called for more oversight and regulation of social media companies. That came a few days before the European Union approved new digital media regulations called the Digital Services Act. Those laws won't go into effect in Europe until 2024, but they will require social media companies to better police their platforms to protect users from hate speech, disinformation, and other harmful content. We're exploring the role social media plays in our information landscape and what potential there might be for regulation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen arguments and divides in your group of friends or family happen on social media? Why do you think that happens? Are the platforms the problem, or is it just how we use them? Should we use them differently? Do you want to see some kind of regulation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on one of those platforms, the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nikki Usher is an associate professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in the College of Media's Journalism Department. Her latest book is called News for the Rich, White, and Blue, How Place and Power Distort American Journalism. Nikki, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, that one claim from President Obama that a lot of our information is coming from a combination of our social media platforms and our online searches. How important are those in our news diet these days?
Well, I mean, I think the thing to remember is saying that your information comes from social media is like saying your information comes from the telephone, right? I think it's a really inaccurate way of saying what information is actually there. It's the channel, not the content. Does that make sense? So your social media feed is going to look really different from my social media feed, and it's often going to mirror the communities that we're embedded in. So it's highly likely that people who are subscribing to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and listening to Wisconsin Public Radio are posting stories about this content, whereas people who aren't engaging with news and information at all really aren't engaging with news and information at all, as we might define it, on their social media feeds. So I think it's just important to remember, like, we access things through digital services now, but what we're accessing is really the question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and a big question, and again, getting back to what President Obama said, is it can be non-transparent why we're getting what we're getting. Some of it, as you say, is coming from our peers. Some of it might be an algorithm saying, oh, you like that? How about this? How much of that sort of invisible hand of the algorithm is shaping what we see?
So the invisible hand of the algorithm is shaping everything we see, right? And it's not just what we're seeing in terms of news and information, but like when we go to buy something online, right? Prices might be different in your zip code than they would be in my zip code based on certain characteristics and demographics that a company might, you know, Google might have about us or Amazon might have about us. So I think you should, and I do think this presumption that people don't know that their content isn't filtered is probably a little bit wrong, given that that's all we've been hearing. And when you look at the Pew numbers, it's something like only like 70% of Americans don't trust what they see on social media. So there's sort of this like real question of how much of this is a moral panic and how much of this is just a reflection of our own worst impulses, and then how much of this is our own worst impulses mirrored and amplified for the profit of giant tech companies. It's probably the latter.
How can people, on the user side of things, how can people, make sure what they're seeing is stuff that they can trust? How can we take control over our use of the social media platforms?
Well, I think it's the first thing is to recognize and acknowledge that these algorithms aren't just happening to those people who are misinformed, but that algorithmic curation is something that all of us are experiencing. So we're all equally subject to different kinds of potential disinformation at any moment and different kinds of ads. So just that layer of skepticism, I think, is really important. The second thing I think that's really important is to take control over your algorithm. And so that might mean limiting the amount of data that is collected about you. It might mean checking to see if Facebook thinks it knows who you are. And if you go in and look at it, at the preferences it has for you and the hobbies it has for you, you may be very surprised to find out that Facebook thinks that you like things that you actually don't like at all. And that's how it's targeting you. So kind of being aware of what Google and Facebook think you're interested in. So that's something else that people can do. And the third thing that I think is really important is making sure that you keep the people you disagree with in your lives on social media and interpersonally, because that's the only way that you may be diversifying their feed. And it may be the only way that you're aware of how the other side is processing these arguments.
One concern is that it isn't just a matter of, one side's political arguments out there and another side's, and that's great, we should see them all. There's a lot of bad information, just straight up misinformation or even intentional disinformation spreading. Is that just a moral panic, or is it really out there? What's leading it to spread, if so?
Oh, I mean, it is really out there, and I really appreciate that you distinguish misinformation, which is just stuff that's wrong or put in the wrong context, and disinformation, which is a deliberate effort to mislead and almost propagandize. I think that it's a little bit of both a moral panic and a real thing. When disinformation is targeted at the precise communities that are most vulnerable, it can have profound effects on the kinds of actions that we take. One example that I like to point to is the way in which Russian internet research agency actors pretended to be Black Lives Matter activists and actually got people to organize and go to a protest. So through the precise targeting that's available to bad actors through social media companies, based on all of the data that we have, the most susceptible people can be instantly identified and targeted, kind of pushing them further down the rabbit hole. So I think that maybe that adds a little bit more context to the problem that we're all facing right now.
We're talking about the impacts of social media, the potential for regulation with University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign journalism professor Nikki Usher. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see a lot of misinformation, maybe even intentional disinformation, showing up on your various social media feeds? Do you think something needs to change to slow the flow of that kind of stuff? If so, what? Is it up to the companies? Is it up to users to filter that stuff? Or as is happening, at least to some extent, in the European Union, should there be some sort of government regulation? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Nikki Usher, journalism professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's with us today talking about social media, the way we get our news via online platforms, divisiveness, mis- and disinformation, the potential for change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have some social media platform or another that you've got trained pretty well and it gives you the kind of news you're hoping to see? Do you worry about what you're not seeing? Do you see a lot of bad info spread by maybe friends or family members in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Andy is with us in Manitowoc. Andy, hi.
Hi there. Wanted to ask your guest, talking about social media and, you know, whether you can trust what you're reading on there or seeing on there. And I was reading the newspaper this morning, USA Today, and one of the lead articles was on inflation. And I figured that the newspaper, rather than trying to trust social media, I go to the newspaper and I trust that, you know, the newspapers are going to, you know, report. We have, you know, real journalists. Yet the article that I was reading on inflation this morning, it led off with the first paragraph stating that inflation was caused by the Russian incursion into the Ukraine. And to me, that's not true.
Andy, I think we take your point. I don't want to dig too much into that story. A lot of different causes of inflation. But Andy, if Andy's argument is, you know, get away from social media, go to newspapers mm-hmm. and hope they get it right. I know you've looked at this a lot, especially at the local newspaper level. What do we find there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing is that actually a lot of local news doesn't surface on social media, but a lot of national news is still on there. It's not like social media is completely void of you know, USA Today articles. It's just it's prioritizing your engagement with your friends and family and content that makes you highly emotional over anything else. But, you know, we do want people to turn to journalism because journalism is produced by people whose full-time job it is to seek out information for the rest of us that don't have the time to do it. And I think it's important to remember that journalists are human. They also are trying to make sense of a complicated world, and they're often trying to make sense of it, you know, in the spur of the moment. I think turning to trained professionals who have at the heart of their goal the desire to do their best to inform the public is probably a pretty solid choice in terms of who you can trust and who you can't trust.
Thanks for that call. I know some of your research, Nikki, looks at, you know, we've got a lot of national media thriving pretty well, USA Today, New York Times, Washington Post, TV networks and things like that. But a lot of gaps, a lot of local outlets, newspaper outlets, either closing or having their staffs cut a lot. Does that leave a void that, you know, we might be filling with whatever we can find online?
Well, I think that this is really the heart of the problem is that if people don't have sources of information to fulfill just like basic needs they have about what's going on in their community, I think it's a faulty premise to say that every community had that even when they had a healthy and robust newspaper, because that's certainly not the case in many communities, and many communities within communities have been consistently marginalized and undercovered. So I don't want to lose sight of that. But there really is a question when you don't have access to information about your community and the specifics of the politics of the school or your community, for instance. Where is that coming from? And what is informing your take on what's happening to where you live, right? And one of the things we're really seeing is that people tend to take their cues more from national parties and national news than they do kind of from what's happening in their own communities. And one reason for that may be the decline of what we might call legacy news media.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Rick is calling us from on the road. Rick, hi.
Yeah, I'd like to know who does Herman's. I heard part of her answer here when we were talking to Streamer, but who actually determines what goes on there, you know, as fact and what's fiction? Because if you listen to one side, you have one idea of how it's looked at. And if you reach around the elephant to the other side, you've got seven other people coming up with facts. Facebook is a prime example of what kind of got hindered during the election as fact and fiction, because now it comes out certain things are fact and Facebook didn't like them.
Rick, I gotcha. Not a ton of time left, Nikki, but especially when it comes to content moderation on a Facebook or a Twitter, now maybe under new ownership, it's a huge question. Who decides what is a fact, an opinion, and mis- or disinformation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have a pickle of a situation because either it's big tech companies manipulating our attention based on data that they are taking from us, or we potentially have the seeds of government overreach and moderation into the things we're saying in our, quote, private lives. So I think we've got a real challenge ahead of us, and one solution I see may be better data privacy regulations and a strong antitrust action against these gigantic companies.
Thanks for that call. Nikki, can you talk more about that solution side of things? I know the new EU law I was referring to earlier did some privacy protection, in part making it harder to target people based on various demographic categories. What would be key to you in legal changes like that?
Well, in terms of legal changes, I think there are two really big ones. The first is the company, Facebook, Meta, right? That's 2.5 billion people on this planet are using a Meta project, the Meta product, over the course of the month/day, depending on how you cut it. That is like a company that's too big to fail. That's a communication and like advertising company, right? And first stop for information for people. And so the fact that this massive company is so massive suggests to me that we really need to think about how we can break up these huge companies like Facebook and Google and Amazon. So I think that that's kind of the first big question. And the second question is that breakup isn't really meaningful unless we protect the digital privacy of individuals and make it such that they cannot be so discreetly targeted for their vulnerabilities. And it's not just about misinformation. It's like gambling, right? If somebody has just had something awful happen and then they get a gambling ad and they're a compulsive gambler, that's going to set them off, you know, potentially in a downward spiral. So there are all sorts of like behavioral things that are happening too that are really noxious.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Nikki Usher, associate professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in the journalism department there. She's the author of the book News for the Rich, White, and Blue. She was with us today looking at the ways social media can spread misinformation, potential for regulatory changes.